This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another threat to cancel. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Thursday, May 24th, glad you could spend some time with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
A North Korean official is renewing a warning that a planned summit with President Trump could be called off. The latest rhetoric involves more name-calling.
The Trump administration is considering tariffs on imported vehicles. Find out how the Commerce Department might justify them.
The NFL is out with a new policy for the national anthem before games. Hear what's required of players.
And a new report says the FBI repeatedly overstated the cell phone encryption threat to Congress and the public.
I'm one of the folks that just thinks the FBI is off their rocker, because this the idea that they've got of basically opening up cell phones to investigation is just wrong-headed, because once you do that, you basically open up the phones to foreign governments, hackers, people that want to steal your identity.
Tech analyst Rob Enderle on a new report about the FBI offering wrong figures about the threat of cell phone encryption in investigations. He's here in about 10 minutes. Another front is opening up in the Trump administration's trade battles. The Commerce Department has announced it's using national security laws to consider imposing new tariffs on imported vehicles and their parts. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
President Trump wants new tariffs of as much as 25% on automobile imports, according to the Wall Street Journal. The president has asked his team to investigate using a legal provision of a 1962 law to find whether tariffs or other restrictions are needed on imported cars. It's the same legal justification used for duties levied on steel and aluminum imports. On Twitter, he said to American auto workers, "After many decades of losing your jobs to other countries, you have waited long enough." Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. The Journal says tariffs based on national security arguments generally take months to execute because the administration is required to conduct detailed studies that provide the rationale for such moves. In a statement, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross says there's evidence suggesting that for decades, imports from abroad have eroded our domestic auto industry. North Korea continues to change the tone ahead of next month's planned summit between leader Kim Jong-un and President Trump. The North's senior envoy for U.S. affairs is repeating a threat to call off the meeting scheduled for June 12 in Singapore. The latest round of direct language aimed at Washington comes after a meeting between Mr. Trump and South Korean President Moon Jae-in. They hope the summit will lead to denuclearization of the peninsula. Here's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
I'm hopeful. What I can say for sure is our team is preparing up and down the administration. President will absolutely be prepared for the meeting as well.
North Korea's Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs warned that Pyongyang could make the U.S. taste an appalling tragedy it has neither experienced nor even imagined. He also referred to Vice President Mike Pence as a political dummy, and added that if the talks are called off, the U.S. could instead face off with North Korea in a, quote, nuclear-to-nuclear showdown. As recently as 2 weeks ago, the summit was shaping up to be the high point after new diplomacy efforts. The NFL has made changes to its national anthem policy to try to soften a controversy. The league announced yesterday that teams can be fined if their players are on the field during the national anthem and do not stand. Players, however, can now elect to remain in the locker room until after the anthem. The new policy also allows individual teams to enact their own policies concerning player protests during the anthem. This leaves the power to the teams on how or if to discipline players that violate the new rules. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell.
From our standpoint, this is a great opportunity to continue that partnership with our players and keep the focus on the progress and the programs that we think are so important in the communities. We're proud of that support, and we think that that's how change is really going to be made.
Any clubs will be fined by the commissioner if players go on the field and do not stand. Josh Peter, writing in USA Today, says under the new policy, the owners protect their brand, and players no longer have to feel divided or distracted. He says with the NFL having committed $90 million towards social justice causes, it's time to end the protesting. It's 11 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. The FBI has repeatedly provided grossly inflated statistics to Congress and the public about the extent of problems posed by encrypted cell phones. The Washington Post says the agency is claiming investigators were locked out of nearly 8,000 devices connected to crimes last year, when the correct number was much smaller, probably between 1,000 and 2,000. Reaction from tech analyst Rob Enderle, head of the tech advisory firm called the Enderle Group. Rob, your thoughts?
Well, it's pretty bad. I'm one of the folks that just thinks the FBI is off their rocker, because this the idea that they've got of basically opening up cell phones to investigation is just wrongheaded, because once you do that, you basically open up the phones to foreign governments, hackers, people that want to steal your identity. It's, you know, once you open a locked door like the FBI wants to do, you open up everybody to attack. And, you know, the FBI, in fact, government in general, hasn't been that secure. So it's, you supply a key to one person, other folks know the key exists, they either reverse engineer it or they just steal it from the FBI to begin with, or from law enforcement. So it would solve one problem. They effectively expose us all to a vast variety of attacks. And part of their argument was that there were supposedly nearly 8,000 phones that they couldn't get into, that they needed to get into to stop terrorists and criminals and the rest. And it turns out that the number was probably a ton closer to 1,000 than it was to 8,000. It was overstated. In fact, in prior years, it was around 880 phones they were talking about. And suddenly when they went to Congress, that number jumped over seven times.
Yeah.
So it just one more in a long litany of things that you kind of scratch your head and start to wonder if the FBI is living in a real world, or one that they've manufactured.
I think they said there were some crossover numbers because they were checking like three different databases or something like that. Is that a believable story to you?
Well, it certainly shows yet one more screw up, but also kind of just showcases what you really can't trust them with information, because their argument is, well, they basically counted the same phone three times. Of course, that doesn't explain why they're 7x too high. So, I mean, maybe it was seven databases, and they counted the same thing seven times, but the math still doesn't add up, because as they say, we're closer to 7x than we are to 3x. And they still haven't provided an accurate number. They can't even figure out what the actual number should be at the moment, which once again goes back to why would we trust you with this kind of information when you can't handle the information you got?
Yeah.
But it does make them look pretty bad. And as I say, this is just a really bad idea to begin with, because once you provide a key to anybody, you open up the idea that almost anybody could get that key, and the end result would be just bad for everybody. Remember that when Germany found out, Andrea Merkel found out that the U.S. had been hacking into her phone, she immediately switched over to BlackBerry, because it was a phone that came out of Canada, and neither the U.S. or Chinese could get the keys to the encryption on those phones. And she, as well as our own government, felt us unsafer, because our own people, our own government, wouldn't use these phones either. They all use BlackBerry. So I don't know what the FBI is going to do. It's great for BlackBerry, but the end result would pretty much have anybody that was concerned about their privacy or the integrity of the information switching to a phone that could not be compromised by the U.S. government or any other.
Mm. We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. We're talking about a story in the Washington Post that says the FBI repeatedly overstated encryption threat figures to Congress and us, the taxpayers. Is it surprising, I guess, that the FBI still does not have an accurate number?
Well, it is, given the fact that they've been going into Congress with the number. I mean, that apparently they've known for some time that this number is inaccurate, and it just now got reported outside of the FBI. So that's an awfully, you know, it's been months. That's an awfully long time to not be able to go in and reconcile a number they presented to Congress. And you know, lying to Congress is illegal. Given the fact that they're being painted pretty broadly by the administration as being a little less than honest, this does not add to their integrity at the moment, and we hope that they get an accurate number going forward. We also hope that they get the sense that opening up these phones to everybody like this would do far more damage than it would do good, because you have billions of phones out there. So to penetrate around 1,000 phones are going to put billions of people, both in the U.S. and outside the U.S., at risk. just seems like a foolish choice.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, head of the tech advisory firm, the Enderle Group. 21 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Word in North Korea has lobbed another verbal salvo at Washington ahead of an increasingly embattled plan for its leader, Kim Jong-un, and President Trump to meet next month, calling Vice President Mike Pence a political dummy for comments he made on Fox earlier this week.
It would be a grave mistake for Kim Jong-un to think that he could play President Trump. It will not happen. There will not be concessions offered by the United States.
The outburst at Pence comes on the heels of another sharp rebuke of Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton. The Justice Department says it will give a second bipartisan briefing today on classified information related to the Russia investigation after complaints from Democrats that they were being excluded from a similar Republicans-only meeting. The second briefing will be held following the previously scheduled briefing for House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes and House Oversight Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy. Senator Mark Warner of Virginia says he's disappointed in the GOP leaders.
This is against any of the traditional procedures and protocols that the intelligence community has used for decades.
Nunes and Gowdy and White House Chief of Staff John Kelly will attend both briefings conducted by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, FBI Director Chris Wray, and Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats. A federal judge in New York has ruled that President Trump cannot block his critics on Twitter without violating the First Amendment. In the ruling, she said no government official, including the president, is above the law. The case was brought by Columbia University and individuals who had been blocked by Trump after criticizing him. Washington Capitals star Alex Ovechkin is heading to the Stanley Cup final for the first time in his 13-year career. He and his teammates beat the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-0 last night in Game 7 to advance.
I think we've been waiting this moment for a long time, and we understand what does it have to take to be in the final, and you can see the effort right now.
Starting Monday night, the Capitals will take on the upstart Vegas Golden Knights, the first NHL team to make it to the Cup Finals in their first year of play.
Meanwhile, Vegas has had their feet up for a couple of days, resting.
Yes, definitely.
But
a pretty interesting final here.
Sometimes we see teams get rusty with a long layoff, though.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Do your colleagues at the office seem to be getting younger? It looks that way to the millions of older employees in industries being disrupted in the digital era and favoring younger, more digitally savvy workers such as tech, entertainment, retailing, and media. As more workers in their 40s and beyond plan to delay retirement, a growing number will have to hustle to reassert their value to their employers. Here's how from Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger. Sue, what'd you look at?
I took a look at the growing number of workers over 40, 45, 50 who want to stay current, would like to continue their careers, but they find themselves surrounded increasingly by more younger colleagues as their industries get younger.
I know you've sort of touched on this before with kind of coping as an older worker in the workplace, but the one question that kind of scared me here is, if you're an older worker, ask yourself the question, would you still be hired today? Right, given the skills that you have today.
I found that a little chilling, too. It's the absolute highest bar, right? If you can answer yes to that question, you're golden. But honestly, many older workers can't. And some of the people I interviewed for this column had really made a point of that. They just kept gaining new credentials, going to conferences, learning new technology, so that they did stay up to date.
So what are the secrets here if you are trying to stay relevant, or as you say, stay in the game?
It's a subtle thing. You don't want to try too hard to look young, right? Because one of your virtues as an older worker is that you have experience, you have savvy, you have the gravitas to offer perspective. So you don't want to run around wearing the same clothes with multicolored hair like the younger colleagues. On the other hand, you really do have to reach out to them and form relationships with people at all levels of your employer. There are two reasons for that. I mean, one is that if your name comes up on a layoff list, there's going to be somebody in that meeting who says, oh, no, don't lay her off. She's really valuable. And the other reason, of course, is that if your unit is targeted for buyouts or layoffs, you have a much better chance of finding a job in a different division.
Mm. What about the look? You touched on a little bit there, but if you're trying to stay hip but not look like a millennial, what do you do?
Well, exactly. You know, where a guy in his 20s might look great in stubble, one of the experts I interviewed says if you're in your 70s with stubble, you look like a homeless person. So you want to be really careful about not going too far. And the main thing is choosing up-to-date clothes that you bought recently that fit you really well. And that, you know, don't look like you're stretching too hard. Men, you know, tapered slacks, nice leather shoes, up-to-date glasses. And, you know, for women, no outdated looks like a cardigan over your dress. Mm. But, you know, buy a nice leather jacket or a new sweater and, you know, tone up your hair so that it looks good. And whatever, you know, color, sometimes gray looks best and other times your former color looks best.
What Sue says, the gray has to be stylish if you're going to wear the gray. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you were fumbling around in the dark and someone handed you a flashlight, you'd take it, right? Nobody wants to be left in the dark. But shouldn't it be the same when it comes to spotting threats to your identity and the data on your devices? The digital world is so full of connections, it may only take one weak link for criminals to get in. Fortunately, new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection now adds the power of Norton Security to shed light on more of today's threats. Threats to your identity, like your personal info for sale on the dark web, and threats to your computer or tablet, like ransomware. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime, but new LifeLock with Norton detects a wide range of threats to your identity and devices that you may not see on your own. Join now, and for the first year, get an additional 10% off the low starting price of $7.99 a month, plus applicable taxes. Go to LifeLock.com today and enter the promo code Gordon. That's LifeLock.com and the promo code Gordon.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome to Thursday, May 24. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Commerce Department may impose tariffs on imported cars. Another threat by North Korea to cancel next month's summit. NFL says players must stand for the anthem or stay in the locker room. CNBC says Goldman Sachs made $200 million in one day when it bet on a surge in volatility back in February. Getaway day today for the holiday weekend, and the woman charged $7,000 for toilet paper delivery. That story in about 20 minutes. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. During Small Business Month, Dell is offering up to 40% off select PCs with 8th Gen Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with a small business technology advisor today. There are currently 7 vacant House seats in Congress. That means almost 5 million Americans don't have a voting member representing them. In some cases, those seats won't change until after the midterm election. Roll Call editor Jason Dick explains what exactly happens in an office representing people with no representative. Jason, set this up.
So we are at a stage where we have 7 vacancies in the House, Gordon. Usually the whole number of the House is 435, plus the delegates from the District of Columbia and Guam, places like that. Right now we have 428 because of those 7 vacancies, and they've come for a variety of reasons. One member, Louise Slaughter, a Democrat from New York, has died, and other members have just quit prematurely. They're for a number of reasons. Some basically think they have a better job on hand. That's the case with Pat Tiberi, who's a Republican from Ohio. Some left because it was a little easier to deal with some of the things that they're dealing with, like their ethics committee investigations. That was what Pat Meehan, Republican from Pennsylvania, stated. So, you know, regardless of how we got here, 7 is a decent number of people to leave Congress, and that means millions of people don't have a member of Congress representing their interests in the Capitol. Each congressional district is approximately 700,000 people. Most districts are a little bit bigger than that. So that's a lot of people who don't have a member who's voting on their behalf.
Wow. There's not an interim person appointed to fill those spots?
So that's more an aspect of the Senate. Yeah. The Senate there are mechanisms in the states where governors can appoint senators, sometimes on a very short-term basis or for a longer term, depending on what the laws are in those states. So when a member in the Senate, when a senator leaves for whatever reason, there is a mechanism by which the governor can get a replacement senator in there fairly quickly. That's not the case with the House. The Constitution does not allow for appointment of members of the House on these sort of short-term levels. And so the states have to, they have to do special elections. And again, each state has a different law or different protocol to follow to replace that member. Sometimes it can happen within weeks or months, and sometimes they're waiting until Election Day. That's the case in Pennsylvania, these two districts that Charlie Dent and Pat Meehan vacated when they left Congress early in the last month. Those, you know, approximately 1.5 million people almost will not have a member of Congress until Election Day because the governor had some leeway. He's a Democrat. His name's Tom Wolf. He has some leeway in scheduling the special election, and he decided to coincide the special election in Pennsylvania for those two seats with Election Day in November.
Wow. We're speaking with Jason Dick, Managing Editor for Leadership and Enterprise at Roll Call. So if I have an issue for my congressional representative and I don't technically have a representative, how do I get something addressed?
So one of the first things that happens when a member leaves office is that that member's office is quite literally renamed the such-and-such congressional district of, you know, whatever state. And so the office is still open for business. The staff continues to be paid, and the clerk of the House, who is the person who really sort of keeps the roll, keeps the trains running on time for the House of Representatives, her name is Karen Haas right now, the clerk steps in and makes sure that constituent mail is addressed, and that so there's somebody there quite literally to answer the phones. And so, you know, like one of the more common concerns that people come to their member of Congress is with Social Security payments or say something that's happening in the district. And those people on staff are there to field those concerns and field those questions. Now, they still don't have a member to take to other members and so forth, but from the chief of staff down to the interns, people are still paid their salary and they're there to do their job until the next representative is elected.
Wow. So the seven vacancies, is that a typical number?
That seems a little high for us. I mean, Congress, like the world, can be kind of an unstable place at different times. This feels long to us. We're still kind of crunching the numbers to find out what are some of the high water marks in the last, you know, sort of 50 years. The 1950s were the last time that we had just a lot of displacements, a lot of deaths, a lot of people resigning early. And so, I mean, we're thinking that might have been like sort of the high mark, but I want to wait until we actually crunch all those numbers. But seven is certainly high for the last, say, 10 or 15 years, which is the time that, you know, I've been paying the closest attention to this kind of stuff.
Thanks, Jason. Jason Dick, editor at Roll Call. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us on this Friday Eve. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. There were some tense moments at a North Carolina high school yesterday as students and staff were evacuated due to an unknown odor reported in the area. The smell reportedly caused students' eyes to tear and their throats to burn at Mecklenburg South High School. Fox News says hazmat teams were called in to investigate the incident, but found nothing hazardous.
This sounds serious, Mike.
It does. The cause, Gordon? A clogged toilet.
Oh.
Apparently, maintenance workers plunged the clogged toilet, causing a release of backed-up sewer gases. Ooh. Thankfully, and unsurprisingly, there were no injuries. According to the Charlotte Fire Department, while a few students received medical care on site, no one needed to be transported from the school.
Wow.
So, you know, I know it's early in the morning, we're all eating breakfast, but you can only imagine what must have been there in the first place to cause the backup, and then what kind of gases were then coming out subsequently.
Mm, from the sewer.
Yeah.
Yeah, this wasn't just, you know, like a bad clogged toilet where smells got trapped in the school vent or something. No.
Right. It's one thing to just walk past the bathroom and go, PU, that stinks.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But I mean,
somebody had onions for lunch.
Your throat's burning. You're tearing up. So, yeah, that's bad news.
Direct from the sewer.
Yes. Mm. And, you know, Gordon, we're sure that there are easier ways to steal $800, but probably no better way to get in a quick workout while breaking the law than this. Authorities in Florida shared video of two thieves accused of stealing nearly 3,400 quarters in a late-night car wash burglary. The Broward County Sheriff's Office posted a video to YouTube showing security camera footage of the May 8th burglary, which involved two men using a drill to gain access to an outdoor payment machine at a mobile gas station. Investigators said the men fled in a silver Ford Focus hatchback with $849 worth of quarters. Mm. So I did some quick math, yes, and with a little help from Google there. 3,400 quarters is roughly 42.5 pounds. So,
oh, wow.
I mean, so that's a decent amount of money, you know, especially, yeah. I don't know what kind of bag or box or whatever they, mm-hmm, brought with them, but you can just imagine the comedy of errors. Perhaps they put half of that even into like a plastic bag, and then it rips and falls out all over the ground.
Right.
It appears that they thought ahead and brought something sturdy enough to carry that many quarters, but that's not a bad haul.
Like a pillowcase on Halloween, perhaps. Those are sturdy, generally.
Yeah, I guess so. But again, carrying like, you know, 42 pounds worth of quarters in a pillowcase might be difficult to do. Even Santa Claus would have trouble hauling around a sack like that, I would think.
At one point, as the quarters are beginning to spill out or whatever,
yeah,
do you think they thought this was not a good idea?
Yeah. Like they thought,
there's,
you know,
so many.
Yes. Yes. Maybe we rob some place that has cash next time. Dollar bills.
And then they meet up with their fellow conspirators later, like in a garage somewhere. Guys, guess what we got? What do you got? Quarters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just silence.
The cops probably should do is stake out the local like Coinstar machine,
yeah,
right?
Because
that's probably where these guys are going next.
Right. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Thanks for being with us. When it comes to helping smokers quit, financial rewards are much more effective than electronic cigarettes. But the LA Times says the sad truth is that nothing works all that well. Out of 6,000 smokers who enrolled in a trial, only 80 could provide biochemical evidence that they were smoke-free 6 months after their quit dates. That is a success rate of just 1.3%. The results were published yesterday by the New England Journal of Medicine. People were placed in five groups: usual care, where they were offered information about the benefits of quitting; free smoking cessation aids, like nicotine patches; free e-cigarettes; financial rewards, like a promise of $300 if they were smoke-free after 6 months; and a redeemable deposit, where smokers put down $600 and were told they could get it back if they quit. A total of 24 people in the regular financial rewards group were smoke-free at 6 months. In the redeemable deposit group, 35 were smoke-free at 6 months. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Britain, China, and Japan today both condemned the Trump administration's decision to launch an investigation into whether tariffs are needed on imports of vehicles and auto parts into the U.S. China's Commerce Ministry says Beijing would firmly defend its rights and interests against what it called the Trump administration's abuse of national security provisions in trade. Japan's Ministry of Commerce, Trade, and Industry says Japan, which accounts for about 40% of U.S. vehicle imports, will continue to remind U.S. officials that any trade measures must be in line with the rules of the World Trade Organization. With its popularity threatened and critics stretching all the way to the White House, the NFL wanted to get past the debate over taking a knee during the national anthem and put the focus back on football. Instead, the league seemed to muddle the divisive issue even more with a new policy that stirred up defenders of free speech, prompted a couple of owners to quickly backtrack, and raised all sorts of potential questions heading into next season. Commissioner Roger Goodell.
We've talked to tens, if not hundreds, of players about this over the last year or so to get their input, to understand their positions, and again, to respect those, as I think was stated here.
Players will be required to stand for the national anthem if they're on the field before a game, but they have the option of staying in the locker room if they want to protest police brutality and social injustice. Milwaukee Police Chief Alfonso Morales has apologized to Bucks player Sterling Brown for a January arrest that started with a parking violation and escalated to include the use of a stun gun.
Our department conducted an investigation into the incident, which revealed members acted inappropriately, and those members were recently disciplined.
Brown called the incident an attempt at police intimidation. Morales' apology came as police released body camera footage that showed how a simple interaction over an illegally parked car quickly escalated. We're just about 2 months away from Shark Week, and with that, details about the big event are starting to emerge. Discovery Channel says Olympic medalists Lindsey Vonn and Ronda Rousey will participate, as will Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers and Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski. Discovery Channel says they will join forces with top shark scientists to learn crucial information about the ocean's top predators.
Wow. What is it called? Lindsey Vonn Week? I love watching Lindsey Vonn Week. Sure. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. It's taken almost 2 months, but USA Today says a Georgia woman charged $7,400 to have three cartons of toilet paper delivered from Amazon should be getting her money back this week. In early March, Barbara Carroll of Berkeley Lake, Georgia, ordered three boxes of toilet paper for two office buildings she manages using the company's debit card. Each box held 48 rolls. There are multiple sellers on Amazon, of course, who stock this particular product, and she chose the one called the Ideal Store. The cost for the toilet paper, about $88. She clicked two-day shipping, then buy, and was done. 2 days later, the toilet paper arrived at the building, but later discovered a deduction for more than $7,000. Ms. Carroll belongs to Prime, so gets free two-day shipping, but the seller doesn't do its fulfillment through Amazon. It ships them itself. After letters, phone calls, emails, and outreach to media over several weeks, the issue appears to have been resolved. Her account is expected to be credited shortly, but of course, in her mind, not soon enough. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.